タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Helen.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
This week we are sharing all your favorite tried and true sewing tips. How do you make the perfect dart? What really is the best way to piece together a PDF pattern? What unexpected tools can be used to help you up your sewing game? We've got it all in this week's episode of Love to Sew!
This episode is brought to you by Sister Mintaka. Sister Mintaka is a small independent fabric store specializing in high-end everyday wear garment fabrics. Sister Mintaka wants to help you express your creativity by providing you with the tools you need for your next project.
You can receive 10% off your first order at sistermintaka.com using the promo code LOVETOSEW. Again, that's sistermintaka.com, code LOVETOSEW. And now, on to the show.
Hi, Helen.
Hi, Caroline.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm really good, too.
I feel like it's fall because it started raining this week, and it looks like rain in the weather for the next week or two. I pulled out
my raincoat for the first time in months, and to be honest, I was feeling a little flustered today because it gets me so sweaty when I'm walking around.
I know.
Like, sweaty in my raincoat. It just feels like fall. Fall is coming.
It hit us like a train.
Yeah. That's okay, though, because there's so much exciting things happening this fall.
It's true. And we have some exciting news about the podcast that we wanted to share with you. We are kind of redoing our advertising situation a little bit.
Yeah. So in the coming weeks, you might notice some new things happening with ads on the show. And we wanted to fill you guys in on that.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, we've revamped our advertising structure. So now we have a pre-roll and a mid-roll and a post-roll. Those are the roles, are the ads in podcasts. And those can be bought by different companies now. We were selling advertising to one company per show, but now we might have three different advertisers on a show, and they'll be spaced throughout the show. So that's kind of exciting. It gives us an opportunity to work with more people and to make our advertising more affordable.
Yeah, more options for small businesses. And if you are a small business in the indie sewing world, and maybe you've reached out to us in the past and thought that our ad program was like out of your reach, then reach out to us again, because now that we've kind of split up those ad spots, it's giving more people opportunities to get in at a lower price. So we're really excited about that.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we're doing is that we are working with an ad agency. So some weeks you're going to hear ads from non-sewing related businesses now. And we want you to know that we have curated the ads that we're going to be putting on the show. So they are going to be businesses that we believe are a good fit for our audience. And we're going to be testing out products and stuff like that. So I think it's going to be really fun for all of us. And it just helps the podcast so much to continue to grow, to help us to continue to do this. So we really appreciate your support and understanding. And we can't wait to share our new advertisers with you.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for supporting us for the last 2 years. It's been really, really awesome bringing this podcast to you. And now that we're a team of four, it feels like we can take on even more, which is exciting. And this kind of revamping of our advertisements is just going to allow us to continue to grow and make the podcast the best that it can be.
Yes.
So thank you guys for sticking with us through all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
Okay. So we do have some feedback from Molly at Molly Sews. I love your podcast. I often save time listening for it when I need a lift or cheering up. I've just listened to your denim episode, and I'm a little bit surprised about the comments about the origin of denim. This Aussie sewist nearly choked on her breakfast croissant and cafe au lait. The U.S. did not invent denim, although it's correct that workers did require a sturdy fabric for working clothes. A widely held view is that it was born in... Oh, I need your help.
Nîmes.
In Nîmes, France, during an unsuccessful replication attempt of a hard-wearing cotton fabric known as jean. Jean? How would you say it?
Jean?
Jean?
Maybe?
Like jean with an E on the end. Named after the city of Genoa in Italy. Genoa?
Yeah, I think it's Genoa.
The fabric weavers of
Nîmes. This is great.
Realized they had developed a unique and sturdy fabric unlike anything else. This fabric was made using a twill weave with the weft passing over the warp threads. The weavers used indigo to dye the warp threads blue, but left the weft threads their natural white color. This process gave the fabric a unique blue color on one side with white on the other. They called it
Serge de Nîmes,
translated to Twill of Nîmes. And she's included a reference, which we will put in our show notes as well. Molly, thank you for bringing this to our attention. I think we glossed over the origin of denim a bit at the beginning, which we shouldn't have because the whole episode was about denim.
Yeah.
And talked about how it was a really important part of America and that it was the fabric of America. But we really appreciate you bringing this to our attention and sharing that with our listeners.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like, fabric and textiles and even the fashion industry has a really rich history, and it can be hard to dig deep and get all those facts when we're doing this episode prep. So I'm really glad Molly emailed in and gave us the lowdown on that.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of emailing in, today's episode is all about your feedback and your tips, because we're doing a whole episode about your best sewing tips. Yes. And we got so many comments on Instagram and in our email, and we got voicemails to share with you, and we have lots to get through. So I think we should just go for it.
Yeah. Let's do it. So you know that feeling when you hear a good sewing tip that kind of blows your mind?
Yes.
Well, hold on to your thread spools, people. Because this episode is going to be that feeling over and over and over and over again. We felt that when we were reading through all of these tips, and we're really excited to bring all of that to you guys.
Yes.
So thank you for sending in all your tips. Let's start with working with patterns.
All your best tips. First, we have a voicemail from past guest Denise Archer.
Hello, Helen and Caroline and the Love to Sew community. This is Denise Archer from Portland, Oregon, also known as Pimp Slap. Here's my favorite sewing tip. Put down that paper cutter. You don't need to cut those PDF pattern sheets. Make friends with the biggest window in your house and tape together those PDF sheets on your window. It acts as a light box, and you can see through your sheets to match the pattern lines. What a time saver. Bye.
Thank you, Denise. I love how you explained this, because I have seen people taping PDF patterns to their windows, and I've never really understood like what the hype was about that. I mean, caveat is that you need a large window in your space to be able to do it, but yeah. I think it's a great tip.
Yeah, I think it's an awesome tip. I'm going to try this next time I assemble one and see how it goes.
Yes.
And Anna She Makes says, when sticking PDF pattern pages together, work in small sections, sticking together the pages for one or two pattern pieces at a time, and then rough cutting them out and starting on the next. It's so much easier than trying to stick together every single page of one massive sheet. This is such a good tip. I totally do this. You do have to be a little careful, because sometimes if you get too aggressive with the cutting off of the sheets, then it becomes hard to figure out what pages are supposed to go where. Mm-hmm. But if it's really clear, like you're like, this is one pant leg and then the next section is going to be the other pant leg, I'm good to just separate this off here. Absolutely do that, because you don't need those in between pages to line up. You can combine these tips. Window, chunks, chunky window.
Chunky window tip. Love okay. it. Our next tip is from Laura. Don't be afraid to think of a pattern as a suggestion or guide and not the only way to sew your thing. Your thing. Your brain is just as good, and you can alter steps if you need to. You're smart and you totally have this eventually. And if you can't save it, repurpose it and remind yourself that mistakes and napkins are just proof that you are trying. I love this like gentle encouragement from Laura.
Yeah. You can just go for it. Your brain is just as good.
Yes. Sometimes.
And I love that she says napkins as in like, if your shirt doesn't work out, it's just a really good napkin.
Yeah. You can make it into napkins.
All right. Elizabeth says, whenever I sew, I keep blue painter's tape close at hand. Not only do I use it to guide my seams on my sewing machine, but I also label every pattern piece by writing on the tape with a permanent marker and sticking the tape on the pattern piece. I can now also tell the right and wrong sides of each piece. And even if you iron over the tape, no residue comes off on the fabric. I love my blue painter's tape.
And we had quite a few people recommend using painter's tape or some type of tape to mark the right and wrong side of your fabric. I think that's an awesome tip.
Mm-hmm. And Stitch So Snip also uses tape. When I quilt my fabric for, say, a tamarack jacket, and the quilting pattern is geometric or horizontal, then instead of marking the pattern on the fabric, I use clear packing tape. I lay the packing tape down one line at a time and sew along the edge. It gives you perfect straight lines and consistent distance between each line. Plus, it saves you time because you don't have to mark out your quilting pattern. Yeah, there was a little discussion happening in our comment section about this. And when you're using packing tape specifically, you don't want to press it really hard into your fibers. You're basically laying it on top. You can also get really, really wide painter's tape, which would probably do the same thing and maybe be a little less sticky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would recommend if you're using tape on fabric, like I wouldn't tape your fabric and then leave it for weeks. You know, I would try to make that like a one and done thing. Tape your fabric, do that stitching, remove that tape, make sure that you're not leaving any residue behind.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Our next tip is from Alicia. I use grid interfacing, the kind with 1x1 inch blue lines, to trace my patterns, especially the ones I feel will become tried and true patterns. The grain lines become easy to align, pattern matching becomes a breeze, pattern alterations are easier to read. There are many ways to use the grid to your advantage. Because the material is so workable, I can tissue fit with it and be able to easily guesstimate the number of alterations because of the 1x1 inch increments. I have even basted pieces together for a quickie muslin.
This is so smart. I want to get my hands on some of this.
Yeah, grid interfacing. I think I've seen it in like the bigger box fabric stores.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hot tip.
So great.
Okay, now we have a bunch of tips related to techniques. First, we have some tips about darts, and Kelly called us to leave us a voicemail.
Take it away, Kelly.
Hi, my name's Kelly. I'm from Kingston, Ontario. I've been sewing for about 49 years, and I'm so excited with the changes in home sewing that's happening now. I can order my fabric online. I can join online courses. And I have a tip for you. My tip is for sewing darts. So when I'm marking my dart, I clip the ends of the legs of the dart with my scissors, and I mark the apex of the dart with either a pin or a fabric marker. I then line up those snips and the end point where the dot is. I leave a long tail of thread, sink my needle into my fabric, and then take my thread and use it as a straight line to the tip of the dart, and then just sew along that thread. That way I don't have to mark my fabric with a straight line. Anyway, love the podcast. Really enjoy both of you. Thanks so much. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Kelly. That's a really great tip. I believe I learned this technique in school when I was studying fashion design, and it is a really great way to not have to mark your darts. It's a really quick way of getting your darts executed nice and, what's the word?
I don't know. Efficient, I
guess. Efficiently.
You don't have to do any extra marking. I love it.
Accurately. That's the word I was searching for.
Also, shout out to About 49 Years.
Yeah. Sewing for almost 50 years. That's amazing.
It's so good. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you so much. All right. Our next tip's from Juliana from Berlin, Germany. And she says she has a dart tip from Linda Maynard's Couture Sewing Techniques book, which we'll link in the show notes. Nobody seems to know this trick, and while it seems weird, it works amazingly well. So what you do is, step one, you mark the dart on the wrong side of the fabric. Step two, thread the machine needle, pull the thread through the needle from back to front, and then tie the top thread to the bobbin thread so there's a continuous thread. So you're making a little knot. You're tying your top thread and bobbin thread together. Then you wind the thread so the knot won't get caught up in the tension. You're getting it right in the right place. Start sewing the dart at the tip and don't backstitch. And then once you're finished sewing the dart, you will have to rethread for the next dart. It's similar to sewing from the beginning to the tip and then tying off the threads, but you're tying the knot ahead of time.
I really cannot picture this at all, but apparently there are photos of the book pages submitted with the email. So maybe we'll try to put those in the show notes.
Yeah, I think we will. It sounds cool.
I'm lost.
I'm all for trying new dart tips.
Yeah.
And there seem to be so many, which is awesome.
Yes, definitely. Okay, our next tip is about inserting an invisible zipper, and it is a voicemail from Cora.
Hi, Helen and Caroline. My name's Cora. I'm calling from Bristol in the UK. I was sewing an invisible zip with a zip foot, as you do, and then change the foot to sew another part of the garment. And then I wanted to re-sew the zip again to get that lining stitching closer to the teeth, which I often do, but I had forgotten to change from my normal foot to the zip foot. So I started sewing the zip with my normal foot. I quickly realized and changed it. But then another time I was sewing another invisible zip, and I realized that the way that the normal foot had held down the fold on the zip was perfect for flattening it and therefore getting super close to the teeth. So what you do is, if you sew the invisible zip normally as you would with your zip foot, you could then use this line of stitching as a guide to then sew another line of stitching closer to the teeth and sew this one with your normal foot. You get a really good result that is so close to the teeth that even when natural pulling occurs, the teeth are still not visible. And that's my tip. Thank you.
Cora, thank you so much. I love the idea of sewing your invisible zippers twice. What I like to do is sew with my regular foot and base the zipper in place before I go in with my zipper foot to get really close to the teeth. That way you can kind of push over and your zipper's not going to move. But I'm going to try this. I'm going to try with my regular foot because I do think you're right. It would flatten it out and allow you to get really close in there. So, I mean, whatever works, right? For the invisible zips.
Totally. Easier it can be, the better.
Yeah.
All right. Our next few tips are all about buttonholes. And the first one is from Catherine Emma on Instagram. When figuring out button placement, remember that the button will slide around in the buttonhole, especially important for horizontal buttonholes like in waistbands. If your zipper peeks out at the top of your pants fly, try moving the button over so that the shank or thread that attaches the button to the pants is lined up with the edge of the buttonhole, not the center. This is such a great tip about horizontal buttonholes. Thank you so much, Catherine.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? We have an episode coming out this winter all about buttonholes.
Do we?
Buttons and buttonholes. Coming at you.
Can't wait.
All right. Nomi So says, use tearaway stabilizer along with a top stitching needle for better buttonholes. Super smart. You always want to interface where you're putting buttonholes, but you can also do the tearaway stabilizer as a little extra something. It all helps.
If anyone has tips on sewing buttonholes with thicker fabric, because it's not so much the thinner fabric that trips me up, it's the thicker fabric. Like when you're doing a buttonhole on like a pair of jeans, right? You know, through all the layers of the waistband.
So. Yeah, hammer it.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
tip. Take it to your anvil and just hammer it flat.
So that the fabric is like more smushed.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
That's my tip.
All right. Our next tip is from Rebecca. If you're cutting open your buttonholes with a seam ripper, that scares me, put a pin through the bottom of the buttonhole where you want to stop. So if you slip with a seam ripper, you won't cut through the buttonhole stitching and creating a large hole in your finished garment.
Saves lots of tears.
Yes.
Also, get a buttonhole chisel. It's 2019.
Yeah, you can get buttonhole cutters online. We sell them in our shop, and it's much less scary than risking putting a seam ripper through your buttonhole. Don't do that. It scares me. Oh my gosh.
Okay, we have some tips about gathering. Oh, dreaded gathering.
Yes.
All right. We were going to mention at the top of the show that we're going to try and read your Instagram handles, but forgive us if we're not getting them quite right. This one's from ENJPDX. I hate dealing with gathering both the thread tails and getting everything distributed evenly. With that, I use elastic thread in my bobbin and sew a row or two at the recommended markings to add gathers that way. They come out much more even.
You know what? This is a really good tip. I want to add like a little tidbit, because when I first thought about this tip, I was like, but then you can't control how much you're gathering the fabric. But if you're stretching the elastic quite a bit and making the gathers pretty dense, you can always, like, when you're attaching that piece to the other piece, stretch it out as you sew to distribute the gathers the way that you want them to be distributed.
Kind of, right? But then it would kind of snap back.
You think it would snap back? Yeah.
I don't know.
Would you remove the elastic thread, or you would leave it in always?
I don't know. I've never done this.
Me neither. I need more details, ENJPDX. It's a cool tip, though. I guess if you're doing like gathering where you're not so concerned about how wide it needs to be.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, there's so many different ways to do gathers.
Yeah. So the line says, when I need to gather fabric, I cut dental floss the length of the fabric, which needs to be gathered, plus a few added inches, and I zigzag stitch it within the seam allowance, being careful not to catch the floss in the stitches. Then I just tie the zigzag threads to the dental floss at the end and pull the fabric to gather from the other end like normal. So you're basically making a casing of zigzag stitches, and then you have your floss or your string or whatever you want to use in there. to gather your fabric. Perfect gathered edge every time.
Although slightly minty.
That's not a bad thing.
No.
I love that you're using dental floss because something that people probably have on hand. Mm-hmm. And I have seen this. I think Heather Lou did a dress, Myosotis dress, where she was showing this method. And it seems like a really great way to get beautiful gathers. So definitely worth a try.
All right. Our next few tips are all about facing. So Lipsism says, when drafting a facing, make the seam allowances 1/8 of an inch narrower where it connects to the outer piece to prevent it from rolling out and showing. And of course, understitch it.
Such a good tip. Yeah, this can really help. And Rhonda Lorch says, instead of finishing the edge of an interfaced facing, I sew the facing and interfacing right sides together along the edge to be finished, then turn it so the wrong sides are together and iron to adhere the fusible interfacing. Makes a very clean and professional looking finish. And under this tip, I just wrote, whoa. My mind is blown. I love this tip. It's so cool. So once again, what you're doing is with right sides together, you're first sewing your fusible to your fabric and then you're folding it onto the wrong side and then you're pressing it and then it's all fused together and you have this beautiful edge and there's no rawness. It's like amazing.
Yeah, you basically want to end up after you turn it, the sticky edge of your interfacing is going to be facing the wrong side of your fabric.
Yeah.
So that you can then bond it together and then you have that beautiful turned under edge of the fabric. It's so great. I need to try this.
So cool. Rhonda, you get my vote for best tip.
All right, Gigi has a tip about dyeing. If you have a fabric that might not have the dye set, soak your fabric in salt water. It will set the dye. Also, vinegar works really well for this, especially when we're talking about like those indigo jeans that just keep on bleeding. Mm-hmm. Setting with salt water or vinegar can definitely work.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we got a lot of tips about tools as well, and we have a voicemail from Danica.
Hi, Helen and Caroline. This is Danica calling from sunny Perth, Western Australia. I'm calling to share with you an overlocker sewing tip. When I first started sewing, when I was finishing my edges, I would always be worried about serging past my seam until I realized that there were two grooves on the top of my overlocker foot that guided me as to where my two needles would stitch. So now I'm no longer worried about cutting through that seam. Also, my overlocker doesn't have the clearest of seam allowance guides, so these grooves help me determine my correct seam allowance. I just wanted to add that I love listening to your podcast, especially on long trips in the car with headphones, so I can drown out my kids listening on their iPads. Have a lovely day. Bye.
I think you mean Danica.
I do mean Danica. I'm sorry, Danica. I love your tip because I've noticed in our beginner sewing classes that when it comes to the overlocker, this is something that trips people up. Like, where are the needles actually sewing? How do I know if I'm like going over my original stitch line? How do I know how much I'm cutting off? Where are the seam allowance markings? Like, it's a whole new thing, right? So looking for those grooves so you can actually see where your needles are going to be stitching might help you.
Yep. Great tip. Okay, we have another voicemail, believe it or not, from our friend Adam.
Hi, Helen and Caroline. This is Adam from Evanston, Illinois, and my alter ego is Max and Wolf on Instagram. So many of the tips and tricks that people offer are really cool hacks and neat little things that they've discovered along the way, but I'm not sure that my tip really fits into that category because I think it's almost more foundational, but it's so important I wanted to add it to the list. My tip is to pay attention to your sewing machine needle. That means matching your sewing machine needle to the fabric that you're using on your project, as well as changing out your needle from time to time, as they do get dull. When I was first learning to sew, I got the advice to just use a universal needle because since it had the word universal in it, it was good for any fabric. But I found myself getting really frustrated both sewing on quilting cotton as well as using jersey fabric for simple t-shirts and other clothing. Once I switched out my needle to match the fabric, my project turned out so much better and I had so much less frustration and so much more satisfaction in the completed project. I really think it's an important thing that people shouldn't overlook. Thanks, as always, for the wonderful podcast. It's been a masterclass in sewing for me and I enjoy every episode. Take care.
Aw, thanks, Adam. We love hearing from you. And this is such a great tip, and we appreciate all tips, the more out there weirdo ones and the everyday need to remember this super important foundational one. So thank you for calling in with that tip.
All right. Next up is a tip from Laurel. When it comes to seam finishes, I love a good flip and stitch clean finish, but holy moly, it can be a pain to press and stitch the seam. So instead, I used my rolled hem foot. Of course, I do a test where I mark the seam allowance on a scrap piece of fabric, do my test, and note my new seam allowance. Then I run it through my rolled hem foot by holding the fabric in such a way that it doesn't go all the way around the funnel part of the foot, about halfway over the funnel, then finish the edge. So this might be hard to imagine, but there is such a thing as a rolled hem foot for your sewing machine that will take the edge of your fabric and basically roll it in on itself. It's like a turn and turn little baby hem that it'll make for you. Mm-hmm. And Laurel is referring to that seam finish that we talked about in last week's episode where you're finishing the raw edges just by turning them under and stitching. So she's basically using her foot to help her along in that process and make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, awesome. I think it's great because it's so finicky. Mm-hmm. All right. Betsy says, I want to spread the word about one of my favorite sewing notions that I don't see around too often, the knobbed ruler.
Whoa.
We were talking about this on our Patreon episode. Okay. Ever get frustrated by prying the ruler up off the table each time you need to use it? This little guy is your savior. He's got a rubber knob that makes moving him around oh so easy. I seriously love this thing so much. One of these days, I'm going to glue knobs onto my larger rulers because I rarely reach for them when this one's around. And she's included a link, so we'll put that in the show notes. We were also thinking that those knobs that you get for the back of your cell phone could easily work for your rulers. Mm-hmm. What are they called again?
Pop sockets.
Yeah. So you could stick that on your rulers and then you'll be able to pick them up more easily. I totally do this all the time, like pushing it to the edge of the table.
Yeah.
So I can get it.
Oh, my nails. Why?
What nails?
All right. Our next tip is from Sam. My sewing tip is when you're using a tracing wheel and tracing paper, use two sheets, one under your doubled fabric facing up and the other one on top facing down. That way you get the markings on the whole fabric piece if you're doing a pattern piece on the fold, or on both parts if you're doing two pieces the same.
So smart. Great.
Such a good tip.
Great for darts. Amazing.
I don't use tracing paper very much. Do you?
No, I busted it out the other day because I was teaching somebody some basic sewing techniques, and I have some.
One with the chalk on the back?
Yeah. And then I have the cool little, you know, ruler that looks like a pizza cutter, but it's all spiky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think it's kind of fun. I remember doing it in high school. It's just more tools, right? Mm-hmm. All right. Gertie and Hedge recommends a hump jumper tool for thick seams and for starting seams of thick fabric. Such a game changer. So what is it? The hump jumper levels the presser foot so that the fabric can feed through the machine correctly for even sewing, eliminating skipped and uneven stitches. So, you know, when you're trying to get started on maybe a pocket on your jeans and you have this like raised up pocket, but your jeans are lower down, you can put a little platform or something underneath your foot to hold it up. And you can buy hump jumpers, but I've also seen lots of times people using needle cases because they're nice and flat and small and they're about the right height for those thicker areas.
Mm-hmm. Life-changing, the hump jumper. All right. Our next tip is from, I'm just going to spell it out, HJGDE on Instagram. Attach a Perspex quilting flatbed to your machine to give it a big flat surface to sew on. It makes seeing what you're doing easier and keeps the fabric flat while controlling your sewing machine so much easier.
So smart. This is something you can look into as an upgrade for your machine.
Mm-hmm.
Laura Made This says, use your overlocker tweezers when ironing skinny rolled hems and other fiddly bits. The number of finger burns and steam related injuries I've avoided since doing this. So smart. You get those little angled tweezers that are super long for your overlocker. You could use your hemostat if you have one of those. Mm-hmm. Anything to really get in there and avoid your fingers being super close to that iron.
I've even seen like tools that you can buy that are specific for like handling fabric with an iron.
Yeah.
Not necessarily tweezers, but like an actual tool just for like helping you to turn hems and stuff. I don't know what they're called, but I know you can buy them.
That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. Tony and Jacob Simat.
Who knows?
They said fabric glue sticks or washable glue sticks are useful for closing lined bodices, waistbands, and collars. It also helps to track down seam allowances that have been pressed open when you sew over them so they don't flip the wrong way. It can help with zipper insertion, belt loops, and so much more. Plus, it washes out perfectly. We sell these fabric glue sticks at Blackbird. I have loved them for years. They're amazing for shirt making too. Like, you can put your pockets on if you're trying to like get the pocket in just the right spot. You can use the glue stick to kind of affix the pocket. Basically anything you use Wonder Tape for, you can also use a fabric glue stick for.
I've never used one.
It's great.
I'm gonna get one. I love Wonder Tape. So all right, Patricia So says, using clips instead of pins for doing knit neck bands, total game changer. Not sure why, but it seems like it makes the whole process so much smoother. Interesting. I do have some of those little Wonder clips, and I don't bust them out very often. I've used them for like coat making, basically, and thicker things. But I will try this next time I do a neck band.
Love it. This episode is brought to you by Sister Mintaka. Sister Mintaka has grown organically over the last year thanks to our wonderful sewing community. Here's what one sewist, Bella, had to say about her experience purchasing from Sister Mintaka. I like that Sister Mintaka has a curated collection of stock so I can decide what I want easily.
Sister Mintaka provides a personal touch to each order with friendly customer service and the resources you need to be successful with your next project. Whether you're looking for the perfect fabric, your next pattern, or the finest notions, Sister Mintaka has got you covered. So as Katie says, Sister Mintaka's fabric choices are amazing and really diverse, so I often find things I haven't seen elsewhere.
Don't miss out on Sister Mintaka's latest in-stock fabric, including the latest Ruby Star Society soft and lightweight cotton, and a fine selection of the ever-lovely Atelier Brunette. Go check out Sister Mintaka at sistermintaka.com. You can get 10% off your first order using the promo code LOVETOSEW. That's sistermintaka.com, promo code LOVETOSEW. All right, our next tip is from Heather Johnson. Before you purchase a new presser foot that screws onto your machine, you will need to know if your machine has a low shank or a high shank. A low shank measures 3/4 inch from screw to bottom of the foot, and a high shank measures 1 1/4 inch.
Great tip. And all sorts of machines have different requirements. So just learning a bit about your machine and what kind of feet it takes before you go purchasing anything crazy online. Pearly Stitch says, when grading seam allowances on a curve, use pinking shears to grade and clip at the same time.
What?
Mind blown. I do think that would work. You'd have a pretty skinny seam allowance. So as long as that's okay for the fabric you're working with, then go for it.
So you would actually clip all the way back so that the bottom of the V, let's say, in the pinky shears
is
like
to your
right
stitch
up.
Line.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you have a very small seam allowance. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Just be cautious.
It's a good tip though. I like it. Okay. Our next few tips are all about uncommon tools in the sewing room.
These are my favorite. Yeah.
Our first voicemail is from Abigail.
Hey, y'all. It's Abigail from Atlanta, Georgia. I am just calling to give y'all my favorite sewing tip to look at stores other than fabric stores or craft stores for your sewing supplies. For example, in the U.S., we have Harbor Freight, and they have things from magnetic dishes that you can put your pins in to rulers and different, like, sewing-related things. They even have grommet pliers and stuff like that. I have also gotten some pretty good sewing room essentials at Home Depot. But, yeah, I just would recommend looking at hardware stores and stuff like that, because it can end up saving you a lot of money since craft supplies are often marked up. Another tip within that tip is to check at Dollar Tree or bargain stores as well, because they often will have things that you can use. Anyways, that is my tip. Hope y'all like it.
Abigail, thank you so much. I think this is really smart to look around, especially at hardware stores. My favorite thing at a hardware store is giant washers make excellent pattern weights. But it's true, they do have lots of other things that might come in handy in the sewing room. And the dollar store, I do think, can be good for some things, but I want to caution people against buying dollar store thread because it's just not the same quality as the stuff you're buying at the fabric store. So just buy the good quality thread. You'll thank yourself.
Oh, yeah. Thread's one of those things where you don't want to buy the cheap stuff because you'll pay for it down the line.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Heidi says, I love it when tools I have from my other hobbies overlap. I also do some paper crafting, such as greeting cards and collage. For marking placements of pockets and dart points, I use a hole punch to put the hole at the points I want to mark. I then line up the pattern with the cutout pattern piece and chalk the placement marking on the fabric. It's more precise than transferring the marking by other means. Just make sure that the self-healing mat is under the pattern piece when punching the hole. Super smart. It is so much handier when there's already a hole there and you can just chalk right through the pattern piece.
Mm-hmm. You mean it's easier than taking my pin and trying to shove it through the piece of paper
and then pulling like it up and then trying to, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Cool. Love
we
it.
We all know how that goes.
All right. So Robin has a tip about tracing paper. My top tip is to use the cheapest baking paper available to trace patterns. It's easier to find and cheaper than tracing paper, at least in Australia. You have to get the cheap stuff though. The wax on the better quality stuff repels glue, sticky tape, and markers.
I have noticed this. I tried using baking paper once for doing my patterns, and then I was trying to tape two pieces together, and it was just like not happening. So you got to get the cheap stuff.
Yeah. Also, I mean, the baking paper is nice because it's a little bit see-through. You can see through it. But mm-hmm. just like craft paper, like brown craft paper works really great too.
Totally. And Silly Belly on Instagram said, when drafting, altering, or tracing off patterns, I use freezer paper. It's more substantial than most pattern paper, but most importantly, you can iron it waxy side down onto your fabric and it temporarily adheres. No pattern weights, no pins, and you get the edges cut perfectly accurately. Peels right off when you're done. No residue, not even on silk. And you can re-iron it over and over again until you try it on a cheap velvet or sheddy fabric, and then I guess a little bit stuck all over it. Well, we'll learn from what you've already experimented with, but thank you for sharing this. I did try this once with a freezer paper, and it's pretty cool that it just sticks to your fabric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Susan has a tip about using Frixion markers. They disappear with heat, so you can iron or put a little puff of steam and they're gone. Great for marking as long as you don't need to press them until sewn. One warning, they don't completely disappear from everything. I've only had issues with really tightly woven and printed poplins, but always good to test before doing too much marking. I use them on patterns too. I use different colors to mark different versions or necklines, etc. And you can erase them with a little eraser on the cap. The eraser works on friction. Get it? And they create heat.
Yeah, these are very fun to use. And I've tried the putting it in the freezer thing after, and the pen marks do come back. So it's something to consider. I think they wash away. But maybe if you're planning to use Frixion for your project, just do a test.
Yeah, do a test, I would say.
All right, we have a voicemail from Molly.
Caroline, Helen, hi. I keep meaning to call you. So I hope it's not too late. It's Molly, New Mexico. Anywho, I was thinking, one thing that I never hear anyone talk about for seam ripping is razor blades. And that's what I use for my seam ripper. And to rip my seams is a razor blade. And I have like this huge stack of them. So that's it. I don't know. Maybe it's a pearl. Maybe it's not. But just thought I'd let you know. All right. See you, ladies. Bye.
Thank you, Molly. This is interesting. I encountered a seam ripper razor blade once. My mom gave me one, and I haven't really used it because I'm very scared of it. But it looks just like a seam ripper, except at the end, it has like a curved razor blade on it. And it definitely like takes care of stitches. And I tried it on like a scrap, but I'm always afraid to use it on my big projects because mm-hmm. it's sharp as hell.
Yeah. If you're a confident sewist that you feel like you have a lot of control over your tools.
Yeah. Or you're working with like a duck canvas or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Personally, I like drop things all the time in my sewing room. So having like a razor blade Handy scares me quite a bit.
All right. At Ruby Nettle says, I use a palette knife to help keep things flat just before they go under the needle. Great for bulky seams. The tool is thin but broad enough to give a lot of control.
Love it. Mm-hmm. And at Fast Cowchip on Instagram says, I have super glued a magnet to the side of a couple of my machines. That way I always have a pair of snips handy. Also great for pins. This is a really good tip. I just want to add a little word of caution. Be careful with magnets near computerized machines. So if you have a machine that is not like all metal, then you might not want to attach a magnet to it. Because I thought
that was a myth.
Is it though?
Are there craft magnets that are strong enough to mess with the computer inside your sewing machine? I don't think so.
But do you know what kind of magnet this person would be using? She just says super glue a magnet.
Like a real, like ultra powerful magnet.
I don't know. We've talked about those like IKEA knife magnets. Those things are really, really strong.
That's
so
true.
You probably don't want to, I don't know.
Risk it.
I'm not an expert, but
I don't know. You do you. Put your magnet on there if you want.
Okay.
I'm all for it. Caroline's against. We should make hashtags.
For the magnet, against the magnet.
Exactly.
All right. So Jojo So has a tip for us. Use washi tape to mark the seam allowance on your sewing machine before starting. Really useful for beginners.
It is. Your seam allowance markings are sometimes just like an inch long next to your foot. But what if that went the whole length of the footbed? How handy would that be?
Mm-hmm.
You can make that happen.
Yes, you can.
Okay. What about sewing organization? Because we got to get organized.
Oh, we do.
In many ways.
Sarah is going to help us.
Hello, Helen, Caroline, Sam, and everyone else who loves Love to Sew. My name is Sarah, and I listen to your podcast in Milwaukee, Oregon, which is just southeast of Portland. I'm calling in today with my favorite sewing tip. I primarily use fusible interfacing for collars, cuffs, and facings, and these pieces, with their curved shapes and specific grain lines, leave a lot of odd-shaped scraps behind. Not wanting to throw those scraps away, a number of years ago I started cutting those scraps into half-inch wide bias strips. When I'm finished cutting out the fusible interfacing I need for a particular sewing project, I collect the leftover pieces in a plastic bag. A few times a year, I lay those pieces out on my cutting mat and use my rotary cutter to cut them into half-inch wide bias strips. I store these strips in a small container with all my other interfacings. The strips are odd lengths, but I've never had any trouble when piecing them together. Here are the ways that I regularly use these strips to add stability, strength, and support. Across the stitching line on the shoulder seams of t-shirts, around necklines or armholes where I'm using a turn and stitch finish, along V-necklines in lieu of or in addition to stay stitching, along pocket openings, behind buttons or buttonholes, or behind small holes that need mending. These bias strips help me to cut down on waste and to make better finished products. Thank you for making this podcast. I appreciate the effort and joy you all pour into every episode. Goodbye.
Sarah, we love your voicemail. Thank you so much for sharing your tip. I love this idea of cutting interfacing into strips.
Mm-hmm. It's so smart, and then they're ready to go, and you have a separate bag full of strips instead of just having a mangled pile of scrap like I do. All right, along that line, Teresa says, store your homemade bias tape on empty thread spools. This maintains the folds of the tape and keeps your sewing space tidy. It's a really good use for those old thread spools, and it looks really cute. I found it as an added bonus. I can stand the spool upright as I use the bias tape and it spins as I unravel my tape while staying upright. I think it's because the weight of the fabric evenly wrapped around the spool.
Thanks for your tip, Teresa.
Yeah, that's a great tip.
Okay, Julie says, I try to have all my PDF patterns printed at the copy shop and trace them off before using. Storing the large format sheets can be awkward, but I've developed a system that works well for me. After I roll up the pages, I secure the roll with a snap bracelet, which I bought on Amazon. I use a Sharpie to write the name of the pattern on the bracelet, and then I store the rolls in a tall laundry hamper. This method keeps the patterns clean and wrinkle-free and makes the one I'm looking for easy to find.
Love this.
This is such a good tip. I've also heard people use toilet paper rolls, like empty toilet paper rolls, to hold that like roll of paper together. And then you can just like Sharpie on the toilet paper roll and mark your pattern.
Yeah. And you don't actually have to roll up your pattern tight enough to fit in a toilet paper roll. You can cut down the length of a toilet paper roll and make it open. And then it sort of snaps on to whatever it's holding.
That's so smart.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm in for any excuse to use a snap bracelet.
Yeah, me too. Remember those?
Oh yeah, my cousin was just playing with one the other day.
So cute.
Except hers, of course, was like covered in sequins and shaped like a snake and like way cooler than any snap bracelet I ever had.
I'd love to wrap my pattern in one of those.
Right? Hallie says, I store my fabric in two cloth bins from IKEA, one for wovens and one for knits. They were what I had on hand, and my stash is in its early beginnings, so it's still quite small. However, because the bins are cloth, I wanted to know what fabric I had without pulling everything out, so I started cutting a small 2x2-inch swatch from each piece of fabric before I put it in the bin, after pre-washing, of course. Then I put all the swatches on one large safety pin and attach it directly to the outside of the bin. Now I can easily match fabrics to patterns without taking apart my whole stash. And bonus tip, because I often thrift fabric, I take the safety pin of swatches whenever I go to the fabric store so I can match thread to the fabrics I have so they're ready whenever I want to start a new project. This is so smart. I have a bunch of these fabric bins in my apartment right now. Mm-hmm. and you could totally pin stuff to them. I've never thought of doing that, but that's awesome.
Yeah, I just love the idea of having some kind of like a swatch catalog of your fabrics, no matter how you end up doing it. I've seen people do it on like little cards, or if you're the fabric store you buy from includes hang tags, you just cut a little swatch of the fabric and attach it to the hang tag and then keep a library of hang tags. And then you can just grab that and go when you go to the fabric store to find matching thread or whatever.
So true.
All right, our next tip is from Stitched by Susan. Keep a strawberry pincushion for needles only. And that would be sewing machine needles. Use a Sharpie to mark each section for a needle size or type, such as ballpoint. No more mystery needles. And we have a couple other tips about needle organization. The first one is a voicemail from Jessica.
Hi, this is Jessica from Colorado. And my sewing tip is that I write what size needle is currently in my machine using a dry erase marker. I write it right onto my machine, and then I can quickly erase it when I change my needle. Hope that helps. Bye-bye.
I love that tip, and I just thought of one thing that I can't not mention. If you use the Schmetz sewing machine needles, you can go online and get a chart that tells you what those little colored lines mean at the top. So if you forget what kind of machine needle is in there, you can look at that chart and figure out like this color means ballpoint, this color is the size, and it's all going to be really obvious for you. So we'll find that chart and include it in the show notes because I know it exists and Definitely. It's very cool, very handy.
All right. And Gertie and Sedge says, write the type and size of the needle you're using on a piece of masking tape and stick it to the front of your sewing machine. That way, if you haven't used your machine in a while, you'll quickly know what's in there. So it's very similar to Jessica's tip about writing with a dry erase marker directly on the machine. I mean, whatever works, some kind of needle system is great because it's going to make you get more life out of your needles instead of having to replace them because you don't know what they are, which is kind of the boat that I'm in most of the time.
Yeah. Okay. My favorite section is coming up, all about fabric. And we're going to kick it off with a voicemail from Fiona.
Hi, Helen and Caroline. My name is Fiona and I live in the UK. I just wanted to say how much I love your podcast. I've really enjoyed listening to it and also the bonus episodes on Patreon. I have a top tip for you, and that is when you cut out your fabric, do it on a single layer rather than a double. Now, I know this takes up more time, but it works out in terms of saving space in your fabric layout. Also, you are far more likely to get an accurate seam line when you cut out on a single rather than a double layer, especially if you're a beginner or you're using scissors rather than a rotary cutter, and especially with slippery fabrics. Have a lovely day and look forward to hearing the podcast. Bye.
Thank you for your tip, Fiona. Ellen and I are both looking at each other like, who's got the patience to cut in a single layer?
I mean, I do quite often.
Yeah.
For certain fabrics, of course.
But quite often?
Yeah. Like pretty much anytime I'm using a stripe.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'll cut flat. That's basically it. But I do a lot of stripes.
Yeah, it really does help to save space. Like if you're working with a very limited amount of fabric and you're like, how am I going to jigsaw this together? Cutting it flat, like guarantee you'll, well, actually I won't guarantee, but I can almost guarantee that you will be able to fit way more if you cut flat. You just have to remember to flip those pattern pieces over so you're not cutting like two left sides or two right sides.
Exactly. Yeah. The room for error is higher. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always prefer to cut on the fold personally, but Fiona, I totally get where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Our next tip's from our friend Benita from camp. When I was making bridesmaids' dresses, I had to wash many 6 meter lengths of fabric. I found the tip to serge the cut ends together for washing and drying, and I can't believe how genius it was. It prevented fraying and twisting and was an incredible time saver. This is a great idea. So just taking those two raw edges, do them together, and then hopefully it won't get all tangled up in the wash.
Mm-hmm. So good. All right. Boldly Go Beauty says, using a small piece of tissue paper at the start of a seam when sewing slippery fabrics. It's an absolute game changer for lightweight fabrics.
Yes. Your machine's going to want to eat that fabric so bad. It's going to be hungry.
So you would put that tissue paper underneath, like next, butted up against the feed dogs?
Yeah, exactly. Just like behind your project, just to get going.
Love it.
Julie says, don't only pre-wash your fabric. Dry it as you would the garment, as tumble drying will have a shrinking effect as well as the washing bit.
Yes. So it's not just pre-washing your fabric. It's also pre-drying your fabric.
Yes. And if you're willing to hang your garment to dry, then of course you can hang your fabric to dry too. But I always throw mine in the dryer. I mean, not always.
But a lot of the time.
99% of the time.
Better to do the dryer when you're pre-washing and then hang to dry.
Exactly.
Just in case. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
It's the insurance policy, you guys. All right. Our next voicemail is all about pressing, and it is from Anya.
Hi ladies, it's Anya from Anna Zoe Sewing. You have asked for sewing tips and here's mine. My tip is not mind-blowing, but I think it is a very important one nonetheless. And it is to press your seams when you sew. They say there is a two-step process to pressing the seams, and it is to press the seam the way it was sewn first, to set the stitches into the fabric and to get rid of any pluckers or anything like that. And then after, you press the seam the way it is intended to be pressed. So open or to the side or whatever. I don't always do it this way, even though I should, but sometimes I get lazy. But at the very least, I always, always, always press my seams after I've sewn them and before I go on to the next seam. I like to press my seams from the inside first and then from the outside if the fabric allows it. And I think that pressing seams is very important, and a garment with well-pressed seams when sewn can make a difference between a garment that looks homemade and a garment that looks professionally made. So there you go.
Anya, I so agree with you.
Yes.
I do think that that is such a huge game changer, like for people who might not be used to pressing, and then you get into pressing, it will change the look of your garments and make them look so much more professional, so much more quote unquote ready to wear. I think it's really, really important, and not everybody loves to do it.
Mm-hmm. And I like her tip about pressing your seams flat. Do you ever do this? You're supposed to press your seams like after you sew them together before you press them open to kind of like set your stitches.
Yes.
They say mm-hmm. you're supposed to do this, and it can help with certain fabrics to just get a really nice press. So enjoy pressing. And if you're not enjoying pressing, if you like are press adverse, maybe you need a better ironing board. Maybe you need a different iron, something that's going to get you to that place where when you get to your ironing board, you're like, yeah, pressing time.
I have a funny story about that extra step of like pressing your stitches. When we were planning our beginner sewing class at Blackbird, Natasha did this like whole curriculum, like this whole booklet for people to take home. And it was so good. But one of the steps that she put was like, press your seam that you just sewed to embed the stitches. And I was like, what the heck are you talking about? I've never heard that. And she's like, that's how we learned it in school. And I was like, that's crazy. It's like, I don't think that's necessary at all.
Like, you got personally offended.
I was just like, I don't understand. I've never heard this before, but it is a thing.
Yeah,
it's totally a thing, and it works.
Yeah,
it really does. Like you're basically like bonding your stitches with the fabric, and it kind of just makes it all smush together.
Mm-hmm. And the steam can help even out some tension issues as well. Mm-hmm. It's just helpful.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Awesome tip. We also have a tip from Frau von Welsch. Get yourself a good ironing board and iron. It's so worth it. You can even train some fabrics when pressing, such as wool, so you put some permanent shape into it, which is elementary for jackets and suits, for example. So like Helen said, maybe if you're having issues with pressing, upgrade your iron, upgrade your ironing board, at least adding like an extra layer of batting to your ironing board if you're getting it from IKEA. Like they're not there. IKEA ironing boards aren't bad, but sometimes that kind of batting can be great, thin, yeah. Right? And you get that grate coming through. So just upgrade your ironing situation and maybe you'll enjoy it more.
Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those things that kicks around for a lot longer than you realize. And you're like, oh, this iron's really old and I've never liked it.
Yeah.
Why have I not gotten one that I actually like?
Yeah. And it is something that you're using so much in sewing. So having one that's like reliable and doesn't like spit hot liquid everywhere or something, it's a good upgrade for your sewing room.
One time my iron spit hot steam onto Sam's foot because I ironed right here and he was lying on the couch and like it was like and like on his foot. He was like, why?
And you're like, I guess it's time for an upgrade.
Like, sorry.
Geez, Sam.
All right, we have a few tips about thread. Our first is from Chloe.
Hi, Helen. Hi, Caroline. This is Chloe in London. I'm at Chloe Montrose on Instagram, and here is my sewing tip. You may have heard when starting a project, you should always buy 2 100-meter spools of thread that match your fabric to ensure that you will have enough to complete your garment. This is excellent advice, but to be honest, I generally ignore it. It's partly because I thrive on the excitement of playing thread chicken, but it's mostly in the interest of sustainability and buying less. I use up what I have instead of buying more than I need. So what I do is I take a partially used spool from my stash in a color that's similar to my fabric, but maybe not a perfect color match. And I use that in the early stages of sewing. So making darts, sewing the shoulder seams, the first pass of French seams, anywhere that it's not really going to be very visible. Then I switch to my perfectly matching thread once I get to top stitching, buttonholes, hems, and all those things that are really visible on the outside of the garment. This way you end up using a lot less of that thread, and you know you will definitely have enough to see through to those crucial end stages of the project where it really matters that the thread matches really well. This also applies for bobbins. Use up previously filled bobbins for early construction and basting or gathering. You can use coordinating colours for the seams and use up contrasting colours for basting stitches or gathering stitches. It just makes it easier to see when you want to take them out. So using up odds and ends of old bobbins means that it should free up a bobbin so you'll have an empty one ready to go for your matching thread once you get up to the point where it's going to be visible. So that's my tip. I hope that helps. Thanks for listening and thanks for the podcast. Bye.
Thank you, Chloe. I totally do this too. We mentioned thread chicken in a previous episode. I love to play that game. So I often just buy one spool knowing that I'll use it for the top stitching and any important parts. And then I've got close enough colors for all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really good tip. And I love how you explained it, Chloe. So thank you. All right. We have a comment from Jess and Hen. If I'm sewing dark fabric where it might be hard to see stitches to unpick, I use a white or contrasting bobbin thread. What?
Yeah, this is smart. Or if you're doing basting, like you're basting your jeans together, you don't need to use navy thread that's going to be kind of hard to see. You can just use white thread.
Yeah. Use up that white thread. Just use up all those little bits of thread. I love it.
All right. We have some speedy sewing tips, our favorite. So the first is from M. Ambrosia. I'm a garment sewer, but one of my favorite speed sewing tips comes from quilters. Chain stitching. When you're doing repetitive small things like piecing together facings or batch sewing multiples of the same item, instead of snipping your thread and starting over at the machine after each seam you sew, just chain off a few stitches at the end of one seam and move directly onto the next pair of pieces you're stitching together. Then snip them all apart when you're done. Such a time saver. I love this. Mm-hmm. When I make Ashton tops, I do like shoulder seam, side seam, and just do them all at once.
And then you could do facing.
Or, yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally.
Top Stitch Girl says, my tip is to pay attention or try to learn the general order of assembly for clothing. That way you won't have to stop and double check instructions every 5 minutes and you'll spot mistakes or missing parts of instructions.
This is smart. And I think this is something that comes with time as well. The more you make clothes, the more you're going to notice these things. But I thought I'd add a little tip here is that if you're into reading instruction booklets ahead of time, like I am, because I think they're cool to read all the way through, you can kind of take your own set of construction notes. You can read it and write down, like, these are the basic steps. Mm-hmm. Sew the shoulder seams, sew the side seams, you know, you don't need all the extra information in the instructions.
Mm-hmm. This would be a great thing to do, like, before bed when you're thinking about sewing, yeah. Or like on your commute when you can't sew, just bring exactly. your instructions and write your little Kohl's notes. All right, we're gonna finish off this episode with a series of fun tips. We threw them all in at the end, and the first one is from Nicolius. The most important sewing tip of all: pour a glass of wine and optionally put the kids to bed before proceeding with the fiddly bits.
I love this. All right, Stitches by Beck says a simple one: don't sew when you're hungry. I get hangry.
So do I.
Yeah.
Highland Dance Mom says tape and chocolate. Double-sided tape makes for easy insertion of zips, placement of pockets, and so many other uses. Chocolate, or whatever your favorite vice is your reward for a job well done while you admire your handiwork, or a consolation for when you've run out of double-sided tape, have to resort to pins, and everything goes south from there.
Oh my gosh,
I love this. Chocolate, wine, snacks. This is so up my alley.
At Rip It Out Again says, don't point out your mistakes to others. They'll probably never notice.
This is such a sewist thing to do.
Yeah.
It's like, look at what I made, but just don't look at this part because I screwed it up, right?
Yeah. There's like a weird bump over here. I don't know why, but it's fine.
The crotch looks weird, but it's okay. I know you can look at my jeans. It's fine.
You made those jeans? Yeah, the crotch is super weird though.
People are like, what? Okay, whatever. I'm That Bruja Stitch says, y'all, I wish someone told me that the part of the seam guide on your sewing machine that's in eighths is in inches and the other side is in the metric system.
Yeah, some sewing machines have both and some only have one or the other, but it's true. You got to watch out for that.
Yep.
All right. And we got a bunch of tips from eBrain K.
Yeah.
And we loved them, so we're going to finish off with their tips. Scissors matter. Also, buy the best tools I can afford.
A clean machine works better.
If I think I should baste, I should baste. Also, hand basting works better.
Yes, that probably could use another pressing.
If the dog needs to go out, I should stop sewing and let them out.
It's a journey, not a destination. Learning along the way is the point.
It takes 3 makes to get a pattern right.
I can use fiddly fabric for the first time or try a new and possibly fiddly pattern for the first time. Never both at once.
Sewing is no substitute for therapy, but because aspects of it lend themselves to a mindful meditation or an active meditation, it can be therapeutic. For me, sewing augments the work I do in therapy.
And the last one, good is good enough. Never let perfect be the enemy of the good.
Thank you all so much for your sewing tips. This was really a lot of fun to put together, and I hope that you took a few gems away that you're going to try in your sewing room. Maybe this is an episode you can listen to multiple times. Sit down with a notebook, write down some ideas. We just can't thank you enough for writing in with all your tips.
Yeah, thank you so much. This episode is brought to you by Sister Mintaka. For your fabric and project needs, you can find Sister Mintaka on Instagram at Sister Mintaka and on sistermintaka.com. Don't forget to use code LOVETOSEW and save 10% off your first order.
Also, how cute is Sister Mintaka on Instagram?
She is adorable. That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Caroline, at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helenscloset.ca.
We're recording in rainy Vancouver, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
And if you're loving the show and want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Thanks to our amazing podcast team, Sam Humphrey and Melanie Brister. And thank you all so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye. It's the tip of the iceberg, you might say. Caroline looks so mad.